welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host, here to bring you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Sundays at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m., Monday mornings at 1 a.m., streaming live at richarddugan.com, the radio show's page. The podcasts are at richarddugan.com, the radio show's page, as well as SoundCloud and iTunes, and we are on Facebook and Twitter. And we also will have a link to our guests' website so that you can get more information. As we tell you at the beginning of every program, we really do encourage you to go to our guests' website to investigate what they have shared with us here on the program and see if any of that resonates with you. And if it does, we ask you to grab it and run with it. Run with it and see where it takes you. Today, I think, is going to be no exception. We've had some great, great guests here in the month, in the year 2018. That is not to say that the guests of the previous 10 years haven't been fantastic. Everybody has just been great to contribute to what we're doing here, and that is to try, I suppose, to put it in simplest terms, trying to change the world. Yeah, we are. We're trying to make it... And I've gotten some flack for this. Make it equitable for everyone. Why is that such a problem? Why is that so difficult for some folks to understand that everybody deserves an education? Everybody deserves an opportunity. They have the right to that by virtue of the fact that they're alive and they're human and they're living in our society and in our cultures. There are people that just, some people, believe it or not, I've run across who don't believe that. However, my guest is not one of them. My guest is Charlie Harari, and he is the author of Unlocking Greatness. Sounds like the title of a movie. I have a feeling it would make a good one, Charlie. Thank you for joining us here on the program.
Thanks so much for having me. What an honor to be on your show.
It's the unexpected journey from the life you have, i.e. the world in which we live, the rules, the way that things are played out today, versus the life you want. And I guess that's kind of, we don't need to go through the process as we do on this program of defining the terms such as the life you have. We pretty much know the life we have. And some of us are fairly satisfied. I would venture that maybe, Charlie, you are, what, 85, 95% satisfied with the life you have?
Yeah, I mean, maybe, you know, I think all of us have a certain level of satisfaction.
Yeah.
And what makes life exciting is that the more you figure out how it works, the more you get excited to grow and to change and to be better than you are, even if you have stuff that you're very happy about.
Yeah. And then, of course, there's the other part of it that that you're leaning towards, of course, unlocking greatness, is the life that you want. And I guess that's kind of where we're going to start from the standpoint. How do we determine that? I mean, just because, let's say there are people out there that are maybe at the 50% level or below, as far as being satisfied with the life that they have, they don't know how to, first of all, they don't know how to get the life they want. But probably the most important thing is they don't know what life they want because maybe they don't have the education. I mean, I'm probably one of the biggest advocates for educating everyone. I mean, I don't know about you, but I hear these stories of whether it be immigrants, whether it be the disabled, whether it be maybe the term that I might would be better to be used would be those classes in our society that are marginalized. That seems to cover a broader perspective, but you see these stories time and time again, Charlie, where these people they pick themselves, pick themselves up by their bootstraps. They go out and they do the most remarkable and amazing things. They actually make a miracle of themselves. They become the miracle by virtue of coming from, you know, the dregs of wherever it was they came from to where they are today. And now they're not just contributing to our society, but they're molding it, they're shaping it, they're wanting to make a difference, and you see that all the time. But a lot of folks, they don't, for whatever reason, they can't get across that line to begin that miraculous process. Talk to us a little bit about that.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, I think what ends up happening a lot of times with people, and this is a larger systemic problem, is that people think that if I don't have something, that I can't become something. People are assuming that wherever I am in life, I know if I'm in the great category or not. We think we know who's great. And we think that it's the people that I see on screen, or the people that have gold medals around their necks, or those are the great people. And that there's a guy in my class, and there's a woman in my office, and yeah, I know, but I'm not that. And when you look at people that have accomplished major things in life, like you said, have come from backgrounds that should have led them in one direction, and they went another direction. What drives them is not what makes them successful. Isn't their background clearly? It's their mentality. And the book centers around this concept that unless you are working on your mind, unless you are delving into your mentality, unless you are understanding how your body and your mind and your soul works, whatever you get in life won't feel like it's enough. The question of what do I want is the question that most of us ask ourselves, even if we have the things that we were going after. And the feeling of unsatisfaction, the feeling of being 20, 30, 40, 50% there and not knowing how to close that gap is not going to help by getting the next thing. It's understanding us deeper, understanding what we really want deep down, and then figuring out how to see the world with new eyes.
That is the key right there, is seeing the world with new eyes. When I share some of my observations of the world as I see it, and so forth, the first thing that is usually mentioned is, all right, then you need to work on changing your perspective. You can't actually change what you are seeing. What you can change is how you see it. Is that really kind of what you're saying?
Oh, absolutely. The first step to all change, you're absolutely correct. The first step to all change is the recognition that you cannot change your life if you don't change your perspective. And the reason is because much of what we want out of life is literally right in front of us. And the way in the book we speak about this, every one of us has what science calls a schema. A schema is like a filter. And when you walk around your life, when you go through your days, when you have your family get-togethers, when you do anything in life, when you go into any environment, there are thousands and millions of stimulus around you. There's so much stuff happening. And in order for you to survive, you have a schema. It's like a filter. Because if you took everything in, you'd melt. If you walked into a supermarket and heard every little thing that's happening on every single aisle, you just melt down. So what happens is everywhere you go, your brain actually only gives you a small sliver of what's in front of you. And it literally, it pulls things out of your consciousness to protect you from being overwhelmed. And so when you go through life, your beliefs, your experiences, your mentality is not just like, hey, let's be happy, positive thinking. It's so much deeper than that. In the book, we go through it in detail so people understand it. It's beyond just like, let's be happy. It's if your beliefs are something, when you walk into that room, you're going to see just that. You're going to only find those things that are going to help what you had originally thought. You're going to miss all the other stuff. And so you're going to miss a lot of opportunities for the life you want that's always been in front of you, but that you never had the eyes to see.
Would you say that, I mean, you are within the, you're in the depths, if you will, of the business community here in this country. You've built, I don't know if the right word is an empire, a real estate empire per se, but I mean, you've got an incredible amount of experience in the areas of business intelligence, performance management, and personal empowerment. And I'm curious as to your observations of how, because a lot of what you've just shared really comes, especially to adults, comes from where, you know, where we work, the environment in which we work. And I'm wondering if you think that the rules, shall we say, of business and of working and so forth, need to change in order for this process of, if you will, if I, you've sort of coined the phrase, unlocking the greatness within us can take place? Or is that something that, again, it's another one of those, you can't change the outside world, you can't change the rules, you have to change yourself first before those rules ever are going to change, or before you ever find the other rules that you don't even know about today in order to unlock that greatness within you?
Right. Great question. And I think the answer is both, right? And I think you're hitting on a very key aspect to the world today, that from a perspective of the person who's in charge of things. So if you're a person that's in charge of a family or in charge of a school or a classroom or a company, you have to fully understand that in order to get the most out of your people, you're setting a culture. You're setting the rules. And those rules, without realizing it, is actually impacting the mind of those people that are in it. So every time you have a thought, based on the science of neuroplasticity, those thoughts become part of your brain. The more you think about one thing, the more it becomes part of your brain. And then that forms your schema, and that creates your filter. So if you grew up in a household, and mom and dad aren't aware that what they do and what they say, it's not just that like it moves the kid here or there. It changes the child. So when dad comes home and acts this way to mom, it's not just that like the kid's around. It starts to create thoughts and schema, and now that kid goes into the world a different kid. When that kid comes home with a grade and his parents react in a certain way, that kid's a different kid. And then you take that to school, same thing. You grow up in an environment where they teach you, here's how you become great at something. You got to all get together and compete for the subjects that we decide are important. And then we're going to give you a letter, and the people that have the nicest letters are the ones that are the better people. That gets in your brain. And you go out into the world, and you start looking at the world and saying, hey, I know I'm not smart. How do you know you're not smart? Because I know, because I had so many years of thinking I'm not smart, that my brain sees the world and looks for the stimuli that proves that my thesis true, that I'm not good enough. Right? Same thing with companies. When you've got a company that has one or two people that run the place, and everyone sort of has to like work for them versus trying to get a product and service out to your consumers, everything starts to change. So you're absolutely correct. When you're in a situation, you need to be aware that what you do is going to impact everyone around you. But on the flip side, people need to understand that no matter what situation you were put in, your brain can change, literally. This isn't like a nice sort of, you know, hip hip hooray speech. It's literally scientifically proven you can change your brain. So even if you come from those backgrounds, you can change how you think and change what you see and then play by a different set of rules, which is where a lot of the people that have accomplished great things, that's what they're doing.
You know, it's to me very interesting. I keep going back to this, and I can't help it because it sticks. I'm going to say it kind of sticks in my craw, so to speak. I was talking with a college professor here in the Santa Barbara area, and we were talking about education. And I made the comment, I said, I think everybody deserves an education. Everybody. I don't care who they are, where they come from. He says, no, because, and I kid you not, and I don't even paraphrase this. This was his phrase. Some people are just stupid. And I'm thinking, first of all, wait a minute, this is coming from a college professor. And then, wait a minute, what is stupid? Who defines it? You know, what is stupid and who gets to draw the line? And I was shocked that a college professor, would make this kind of a statement. But there are people who really do believe that some people don't deserve to raise themselves up. I don't know about you. When I was going through school in the 60s and 70s in grade school and high school, you know, I had to deal with bullies and things. And I look back on that and I'm thinking, man, I wish I had hunkered down just a little bit more. I wish I had done a little bit more. But then I start taking a look at the education that I have been taking since I got out of school, especially doing interviews such as this, working for radio stations who bring in guests who talk about virtually every subject under the sun. And these are the experts, you know, and it's like, wow, you know, my classroom. OK, the class is only 46 minutes, in an hour. But some of the great photographers, some of the great designers of civilizations that I've had on this program, I've had folks like Bruce Lipton and Greg Braden and Lynn McTaggart and on and on and on who are at the top of that echelon, if you will. But I've also talked with a lot of the folks who are not quite up to that level. The passion that they have for the things that they have gleaned through the experiences that they have had, as well as the education that they have gotten over the years. And I just really am wanting people to, you know, I mean, I want people to go to your website, unlockinggreatnessbook.com, and pick up a copy, go to the website, read what you have to say, find out who you are even more than what we're going to find out about you here in terms of the unexpected journey from life that you have to the life that you want, so that they can, maybe not from my perspective, change the world, but change their world. How did you develop this passion for this? Why? I mean, I've said this to many of my guests who have come up with these wonderful concepts and ideas for living life. And I'm saying, well, wait a minute. Why don't you just take that and you go over in the corner and you just live your life and have fun with that? And why do you care about sharing this with other people?
It's a great question. And I really, really am moved by that story that you just said. It's terrible that there are people think this way. And it's indicative of one of the great problems that we have. When people look over to others and decide who is and who isn't, as if this professor who may be good at memorizing can somehow say that because I can memorize better than somebody else, or I can analyze better than somebody else, then I am smart and they are stupid. That mentality is destroying people. And I'll tell you what the greatest problem with that mentality is. It's not him. We'll always have those guys. It's the people that he's taught that think that they're stupid, because they're not. Mm-hmm. And to your point, there's no such thing. Greatness isn't only for the few. Greatness is an inherent right that every one of us have. We're all born with an intangible sense of ourselves, whether it's a spirit or a soul, whatever you, depending on one's beliefs, but we have something that's intangibly different than the sum of our physical body parts. And that something is a core of a resource, if you will, of greatness. And if we just learned how to do it ourselves, if we learned how to go out and see the world differently, how to use our minds differently, how to take the resources available to us, we can all achieve our own personal greatness. And what you said before is exactly right. We may not change the world, but we will, and we could change our world. And the same passion in which you speak about that for education, I feel the same with regards to personal greatness. I see people all the time, and I'm looking at them, and I'm going, you have no idea how much more you can be. Like, you're not giving yourself enough credit. You're not pushing yourself enough. Like, you don't realize you could have an incredible marriage, and you could have a great career, and you could, even if you don't change your job, you can walk around with a bounce in your step. You can take on challenges with so much more resilience. You just don't know how you work. And if you could just figure out a little bit more how your brain works and how much of it is in your control, and how much you can use a couple of wisdom along the way about how to be more of a giver and be more of a server. You can, it's not massive life changes, but you can make tweaks that can change your life. And to me, when I started going through my career and I started doing my own research, and I was an attorney for many years, and that's what I did. I spent a lot of time trying to figure things out, and I started to figure out life. Mm-hmm. And as I started to come across a lot of this stuff, I'm like, wait a second, no one's talking about this, at least not in this way. So I started talking about it and started to give lectures about it. And then I started teaching a course at a business school about it. And I actually went to teach about one thing, and I'm like, forget it. I'm teaching you about this, about life, because you students don't fully understand this yet. And for me personally, what gives me so much enjoyment is if somebody else can pick it up and read it and go, I had no idea. Because that's the beauty of finding and discovering things that inspire you, that the feeling of inspiration is only half done until somebody else feels it too, and then it feels full. And that's my goal. That's why I wrote the book.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. You know, when I remember when Steve Jobs announced, of course, that he had a terminal disease and he wasn't long for this world and so forth, and he went through that process. And I got to thinking, you know, when he's gone, Apple is probably going to just kind of disintegrate, because Steve, he was the one who had the vision. he had the dream of doing the things that he was doing and making it what it was. Well, apparently he was able to bring into his circle people who were able to, if not view it the way he did, at least catch his vision and then begin the process of transforming it from that point at which Steve stepped aside and when he went away. And I think about that sometimes with ideas, whether it's whether it is a company or, for that matter, even a family, for that matter. And a lot of times you have this idea, and you want to fulfill it. I mean, I have these grandiose ideas for myself and my life in the future. You know, I mean, my future is, by the way, I still have a good 42 years to go because, and I'm 58, and the reason is because. In 1995, I was doing interviews with my relatives at a reunion, and my great-grandmother on my mother's side was in her late 90s. And I used to say that I'm going to outlive her. Well, after that reunion and every year after that, I kept saying that, but I kept saying also, yeah, and she's making it really hard because she's still alive. Well, she lived to be 100 years old. Okay, so I have 42 more years. Which is another lifetime. And it's funny because someone said to me after my first divorce, which is my last divorce, thank you very much, and I'm married again, but I have no intention ever of doing that, going through that process. But they used to say to me, wow, you look so different. It's almost like, you know, you've been given you've sort of been reincarnated. And I'm thinking, well, that's pretty cool. I like a reincarnation in the same lifetime. That works for me. But I got a new lifetime. So I'm thinking, well, okay, that went through about 38, 39 of my years, first portion of my life. So you tack on another 42 to where I'm at right now. I got another lifetime to live. I got a lot that I want to do. I want to travel. I want to share these ideas. I want to get together with people such as yourself face-to-face in a studio or out in the open. I mean, I'm doing interviews with people out on the beach with my digital recorder because I want a different ambiance. I want to travel around the world and talk with people who are doing the kinds of things you are doing. They may never write a book, but they may never go on the speaking circuit, but they're sure having an impact in their communities, whether it's just their family or maybe their coworkers or their church group or whatever philosophical organization they're part of, or just their friends, their associates and so forth. And so I'm wondering, I mean, the first thing it sounds to me as we are talking here, the very first thing that we need to do, as you talk about in the first part of your book, is we need to learn how to experience reality. We need to learn how to change our observational filters, if you will. So then you go on to the next step, if you will, and that is how to satisfy our needs. And you can't satisfy your needs unless you know what your needs are, and that's different from wants. So when we talk about our needs, are we talking about the basics of food, clothing, shelter? And obviously for all of that, you have to have a job.
So when we get into the needs and the wants, what I'm trying to do is create a distinction for people so they understand the difference between something that I need and something that I want. Right? Wants are ways to fulfill needs, right? So, for example, I need to eat. I want to have a donut, right? You don't need the donut. You need to eat. In fact, you probably don't even need the donut, but that's a whole other story. What happens to people sometimes is that they get hooked into their wants. And when those wants get harder, they get lost. You need to connect to human beings. You don't. You want to be connected to that particular human being. Right, and if you break up or it doesn't work out, there's a breakdown because now I don't know what to do. If you speak about life from the perspective of your needs, what you can, the amount of opportunities you have to satisfy those needs, all of a sudden becomes much, much, much larger. Your perspective broadens. The ways you can fulfill your needs becomes much larger. And then if one of the potential wants, the ways you've done it in the past, changes, You don't get broken. You don't get lost. Mm-hmm. But what I really wanted to take people to, and that's sort of as the chapter builds, is to get people to understand the idea of satisfying their metaphysical needs.
Ooh,
we have
yes.
psychological needs,
yes.
And we have spiritual needs, mm-hmm. metaphysical needs. And to do that, we need to understand them. And the two key needs that each of us have is the need to be significant and the need to be connected to others. Those are like rain and sunshine to the plants.
You know, and I'm going to have you pause right there, because what I'm seeing in our world today on the news, unfortunately, is people who are acting out. We had a situation here in Santa Barbara some years ago that was actually brought to light again with another incident only a few days or weeks ago elsewhere in the country, where these individuals, they actually did, this is probably fairly accurate, you probably observed this too, they felt insignificant. They did not feel a part of, you know, the community, of the tribe, of the family, and so forth. They have been rejected, and so they acted out. Is that a fair assessment?
Absolutely. When people feel rejected, when people feel insignificant, they react. But our responsibility is to recognize, and this is where it gets hard, that significance is not something that I get from other people. Because everybody in this, there are a lot of people in this world that are focused on themselves. And when you go into different societies and you expect somebody to make you feel significant, you are putting your core needs in somebody else's hands. And that's a very risky proposition. Significance stems from your capacity to be a giver, because you have talents. What you're doing now with this show and the excitement in which you speak about it and what you've delivered for your listeners is a great example of significance. Because what you're doing is saying, listen, I'm getting my significance through my service, through my giving, through me, by taking people and bringing them to others. In that conduit of allowing people to be more, to hear new ideas, it's through that mechanism that you find significance. If I would say to you, and I would give you awards, and I would hand you more money, you would say, great, I'll take it. But that's not going to be what makes me feel alive in the morning. And when you live in a world where people are constantly searching for symbols of significance, letters, grades after their name, letters after their name, prizes, likes on Facebook, and those are all good to have. We should all have, we should all be responded to by society with all the accolades. But if that's the driver, you will always feel empty. And when people grow up their lives and they get into societies that teach them and tell them, just keep on going, here's success, keep on going, here's success, corner office, this school, this grade, this amount of friends and fans, and you start driving your life towards collecting symbols, even if they're small symbols, championship trophies, right, fantasy football league wins, whatever they are, leveling up in different video games. When you're just striving for symbols, you can get all the symbols you want. You'll still wake up in the morning and go, how come I don't feel satisfied? It's because you're not giving your soul the nutrients it needs to succeed. But when you start to see your significance as your contribution, you can be alone in a room with your spouse and feel more significant than somebody standing on a stage at the Academy Awards accepting the best, whatever win that they had, because that's where significance lies.
Yeah, I know that some years back, and I used to be a football fan, and I'm an avid baseball fan, and honestly, you could turn any game on and I would sit and watch it. It doesn't matter who's playing. I just absolutely love the game. A musician by the name of Terry Cashman did a beautiful song called Baseball in Ballet. And, of course, I am grateful to the Arizona Diamondbacks for having won a World Series in 2001, because now I can say I'm from a World Series town. It's so exciting. But I used to, I've been in broadcasting 40 years, and I used to wonder, where's my World Series? Where's my Super Bowl? Where's my Masters? Whatever sport you want to throw. Where's my Stanley Cup? Where is that for me? And I kept thinking about that, and this was many years ago. I don't think about that way anymore, because my rewards or awards are what I described it to you earlier when I was talking about the great education. I mean, I should have a PhD or master's right now, okay? Just by virtue of the people that I've been in the room with who have been guests on programs or my guests. But those are my rewards and awards, are those people and the conversations and the wonderful information, if you will, that comes forth. I even had employees who used to complain when I was working back in Phoenix. When I'd ask them, would you mind going and cleaning the restroom? Which, again, was part of the job description when they were hired. This is, you don't pay me enough to do that. I said, excuse me, that's exactly what we pay you for, because that was one of the job descriptions you were hired for, in addition to the broadcasting stuff. And I could have gone down that road. And I often think of Nelson Mandela, who tells the story of his imprisonment and spending 25 years in jail. And that he had a choice. And I had a choice. I could have gone down the same road as my employees, my coworkers. I looked at them less as employees and more as coworkers, because we all did the same job. And I could have said, yeah, this company doesn't pay me enough. And in the mid-80s, there was a story came out of CBS Radio about Motorola. They were laying off about 100 people, or maybe it's closer to 1,000. And the reason was because after an inventory, they noticed that there was about $1 million worth of materials that were missing. Well, where did those materials go? I mean, you know, you didn't have thieves in the middle of the night. It was the employees who were pilfering. And they may not have had eyewitnesses, but I'll bet you that majority of those people that were laid off were some of those people that were taking some of their materials because they didn't think that Motorola was paying them enough. I could have gone down that road, but I said no. And I was doing these kinds of interviews back then. And I realized that I'm getting compensated, maybe not directly by my employer, but through these interviews. And I get the books and I get the CDs and I get the contacts and I get the interviews and this whole interaction you and I are having. And that's the road I went down, like Nelson Mandela, who could have gone down the road of, you know, I'm going to continue to fight and I'm going to continue to be belligerent and I'm going to continue to be hateful and angry and on and on and on. Or I could go the other way. And what happened? He became the president of South Africa because he chose to look at the world, his world, a different way. And that's really that's what you're talking about here. But in terms of this aspect of needs, I want to talk more about the metaphysical needs. And when you said that, what flashed on me was the two things that I carry with me almost all the time, and this is aside from my wallet and my keys and stuff, but I have these two pouches that I carry with me most everywhere I go. One of them contains one of my favorite books. It was given to me by one of my mentors back in Phoenix, and it's called The Impersonal Life, and I've had it since I was 21. And another pouch that I carry around with me is two drawing pads, and a package of drawing implements, because I never know when something may strike me that I want to draw. And somehow, even just having those with me, even if I do nothing with them and maybe once in a while pull the book out and read it, there's something about that that is satisfying to me internally, you know? And I'm wondering if this is akin to this aspect you talk about in terms of the metaphysical needs, that we have certain things that we know that we want to do, and this is beyond our jobs. This is beyond our, maybe it's along the life's purpose, but they're things that sort of feed us along the way more than just the food.
Absolutely. In fact, that's exactly right. The things that feed us along the way for our bodies are our food, but it's those moments like you just mentioned that feed us in our souls. It's those moments that are beyond what we make. If those moments are beyond what we do to survive, you know, people that work in jobs and say, I call them the TGIFs. TGIF to me is the worst acronym ever created. That's like, holy cow. TGIF means 5/7 of my life I feel is not exciting, so that I can leave for 2/7 and distract myself to forget my other 5-7s. Like the thought that you walk out of your job on Friday afternoon and you're like, thank God it's Friday, means I don't like my life.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there are people that have no choice. Fine. God bless you. The fact that you're working in a job that you have no choice for, to give a life to somebody else, that's wonderful. But at least they should be aware of the fact that they're making a sacrifice for the greater good and enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? People don't. But what happens to people, again, is remember, the job, if it's only there to put food on your table, it's still physical. It's still in the realm of eating. And after a while, eating and drinking and sleeping and procreating could only go so far in one's life in terms of giving you that deep down food, like you said, for your soul.
Mm-hmm.
You have more. And to your point, it comes at any given moment. But you have more inside you. And you have more to give. And it doesn't have to be the world knows it. But it's in that giving, whether it's in the drawing or the painting or the singing or the sharing ideas or making somebody feel good, or even if it's that person that works in that job and then on the weekend is spending time with their family or their children or their spouses or their parents, and they're there for them and they're fully immersed in their family or in their faith or in their hobbies. When you're fully immersed in something that you give to others, you feed your soul. And you feed your soul in a way that gives you true significance and true connectedness. And that feeding allows you to go back into your regular life, so to speak, and make everything feel better. However, and this is the major however, feeding your soul always stands quietly behind feeding your body. That's how it works. The metaphysical is always just outside the physical.
Mm-hmm.
So it's easy to get caught up in a world of feed my body, work to feed my body, and then in my free time, entertain myself and distract myself from feeding my body.
Yeah.
And my whole life is just a life of my body. And I'm going to follow everything. My life is going to be, where can I eat? And since I've been eating for so many years, I got to push eating up to the next level now and find ways to eat more and different, because I've taken the pleasure of eating and I got to continue that. I understand sexuality is a big deal. It's a core piece of our lives, of our bodies, of our needs. But I'm going to push it to such a level where at every free second of my life, I'm going to be engaged in some level of that, either watching it or engaged. Just you name a physical pleasure, and people will spend their lives engaged in it or working hard to spend more time engaged in it. And then they wake up and they're like, how come I don't feel it? And the answer is because you're not feeding your soul. It's going to stand quietly behind the needs of your body. And here's the trick. People are going to think that their lack of satisfaction is that they don't have enough physical needs. My house isn't big enough. The vacation wasn't nice enough. I don't get enough of that. So yeah. I'm just going to keep on fighting.
Yeah.
Because I'm sure when I get to the next level of that, I get more food, more sexuality, more stuff, then I'm going to like stand and I've arrived. But just one look at Hollywood shows us otherwise.
Yeah.
Right? It doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
And That's the point that you said earlier. If you're not feeding that to your soul, you're not living the life that you want.
You know, when I my wife and I went on our first vacation in 10 years back in 2016, we drove up to Yosemite, spent a night there, went to this wonderful event they hold there at the Majestic called the Bracebridge Dinner. What an event. And then we drove up further to Nevada City, and we spent 3 days there, and we went and drove around different places. But one of the rule was that we were not going to rush anywhere. Well, this past year, 2017, the same week, I wasn't on vacation. I was working. But all I could think about was that trip. All I could think about was not necessarily the details, but how I felt. How good that felt to be on the open road and just going almost where the wind took you. Yeah, we did have an agenda, sure. And we had a timetable of, okay, we're leaving on this date and we have to be home by this date. But anything in between is fair game. And it's not a sense of, oh man, I wish I could do that again. Sure, I wish I could do that again. But it's more, wow. I can go back in my mind to that time and just feel that same feeling of just utter contentment. It was just a wonderful time. And when you can go back, and you know, you talk about, and I don't know if this is quite accurate or not, because I'm thinking this whole aspect of, and by the way, I like the word metaphysical, and I got into a lot of trouble when I was working for the Christian radio station, and I would use that word, and I said, have you looked it up? Do you know what the word means? It has nothing to do with religion. The word defined, it's beyond the physical, okay? Mm-hmm. And Christianity is beyond the physical. Anyway, we talk about how we, you know, we can feed our soul by doing a lot of different, by, you know, maybe just sitting still somewhere, being with spouse, giving to community, those kinds of things. And on the one hand, it's all an individual process, but at the same time, it's not, because we're all connected, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We're all connected. It's not an individual process. We're all one. And your capacity to go around on vacation and to live a life where you're respecting the journey is exactly how you connect it to everything around you. You see, what most people forget is that when you get in a world that teaches you when you're young, move through the system. First, second, third, fifth, you get to the job, you know, you're an associate, an analyst, whatever it is. You just keep on moving through levels and through systems. You start to focus on the destination. You start to think that there's a place I got to get to. You start to think that when I reach this level, and your story of going on vacation and saying, okay, I got to go here and I got to end up here, but everything in between is fair game, means that you're saying, I need to respect the journey. I'm respecting the person I'm with. I'm respecting the places I'm going. And I'm not going to superimpose my way of seeing the world and my timeline for how much of it I need to see. I'm going to respect the environment around me and allow the environment, the universe, God, whatever you want to call it, to dictate what I should be experiencing. And that calmness and that patience allowed you to open yourself up to a deeper connection to everything around you. Now imagine life being like that. Imagine life being as enjoyable as a vacation, because the journey itself is the point, because there's nowhere we have to go. There's no, we're all in movement.
Yeah.
We're trying to get somewhere. We've got goals. We're in a direction. But along the way, we are open to stopping for longer. We are listening to people. We are hearing someone else's ideas. This happened to me just recently. A friend of mine said, listen, I need to talk to you about something. Can we go out for a cup of coffee? And I'm thinking, you know, I'm busy. I'm busy. And, you know, I only got a half an hour to fit you in. I'm like, you know what? This is the right thing to do. Just go. And I let that happen, the journey. And I went out to a cup of coffee to help out my friend for no other reason. It's the middle of my day. Threw the whole day off. I'm sitting at coffee. The table next to me is another friend of mine who is in a business opportunity that I didn't know how to get into. And he's sitting right next to me. And he gives me his card. He goes, give me a call. I'm like, are you kidding me? it would have taken me 2 days to get to you. And he's literally next to me at the coffee shop. Because you got to let the world put you where you need to be. And when you can do that and have that patience to work on yourself, to change your perspective, to connect to things that are deeper, to enjoy the journey, not the destination, people would be amazed by what life can give you.
It's amazing. I've been quoting, and it's been 20 years or more since I read the book, but I'm always, what you just shared also speaks to what James Redfield says in his Celestine Prophecy about how we have messages for one another, and we've got to be open to giving those to one another. I honestly believe that that's also part of the whole feeding the soul and connecting with people. I have to say that my wife absolutely loves conversations that just go all over the place, and they don't have anything to do with the material world. They don't have anything to do with politics or work, or they're usually very metaphysical in their structure, in their content. I love those too. Because I like hearing where other people are coming from. But at the same time, I also like sharing where I'm coming from and saying, hey, have you ever thought about this? You know,
right.
And I just think that's fantastic. We're going to continue our conversation here in just a moment. We're going to take a quick break, and we're going to come back to talk more with Charlie Harari, and he is the author of Unlocking Greatness. Yes, that's right. And the title is also the website. It's UnlockingGreatnessBook.com. UnlockingGreatnessBook.com. I'm Richard Dugan. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We'll be right back.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand you.
Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm here with Charlie Harari, and he is the author of Unlocking Greatness, and UnlockingGreatnessBook.com is the website. We encourage you to go there and do more research. Now, at the time of our conversation here, you have a speaking engagement. I'm not going to ask you about specifics, but I'm going to ask you in a general sense. You have a speaking engagement coming up May the 14th in New Jersey. What if I was going to attend? What could I expect to hear from you in that I probably wouldn't hear anywhere else?
Well, a lot of what we're going to do at that talk is talk a little bit about how your beliefs work, where your beliefs come from, and more importantly, their impact on your reality. We've got some great science about teachers that have thought more of their students than they thought possible, and those kids got even better than they were. We'll talk about a little bit more of the schema. We'll go deeper into that and how we're missing things along the way. And we're going to give some real practical examples of how somebody could literally start to change how they see the world and how they find more power within them. And so a lot of the times when we go out and do these events, we take pieces of the book, and it allows us to sort of expand on it more, give people the opportunity to ask questions and delve into it more, and present a narrative as to what one has to do to unlock the greatness within them.
And you've already stated that we all have this within us. This is inherent in us as human beings, right?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. Every one of us, and this is one of the reasons why the book is entitled Unlocking Greatness. And when I remember when we sat with the publishers, and I was very adamant that I wanted this name. In fact, this is also a podcast I have every week called Unlocking Greatness as well. And this has been going on for a bunch of years I've had on this podcast, and I chose the name deliberately, because it goes to a common misconception that people have. People think that they have to become great. So there's a sense of I'm not great, and I want to become great. So let me buy a book or hear a class or read it. Let me just do something that can get me over the bridge from me, not great, to hopefully me, great. And that's just not true. You don't become great. You reveal great. You unlock great. This isn't taking you across a bridge. This isn't taking you down in the tunnel, because you have it inside you. You're built with it. And you know what you should be doing. And you know what you should be going. And you have love and greatness and empowerment and all the things you want in your life. You have them right in front of you. And the things that you want more of will come when you fix what's in front of you. There's no skipping in real life. And so when people start to understand that they have within them all the greatness they'll ever need, and now they got to dig in to see it, it's a different game. It's a totally different paradigm shift. And that's what I was hoping to accomplish even in the title of the book.
So you're not saying, or maybe you are, that I am already great, but that I have to tap into that that's within me to bring it sort of to the surface? Am I misunderstanding?
Yeah, I'm saying that you have within you all the greatness you'll ever need.
Okay.
Now your job is to bring it out.
Okay.
And if the potential is inside, you may be doing things that don't feel like you're living your greatest life, but it doesn't mean that you don't have it inside. It's in there.
Right.
You know, it's like I tell the story of the person who works out. Right, you always find that person. I was that person, right? I decided a couple of years ago that I wanted to run a marathon. It was in honor of my friend whose daughter had gone through cancer, and I wanted to raise money for the organization that helped her. And so a year and a half ago, I said I was going to run a marathon. I never ran a marathon before. So over the course of a year, I trained for the New York City Marathon, and I ran it. So was I able to run that marathon? when I first started training, you better believe it. But when, if you told me the first day of training, you're running 24 miles, I'm thinking, what, are you crazy? 26.2 miles. I'm like, I can't even run down the block without huffing and puffing. But within me was the power to run that marathon. But I wasn't able to bring it out yet.
How about that woman you saw in the news just a few days ago who ran the Boston Marathon?
Yeah.
She started it. She's been diagnosed with cancer, I believe it was. She had to stop somewhere along the way because her body was just giving out. And what was it? A few hours later, she and her husband went back to where she left off and completed it somewhere around 12 or 1 o'clock in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't matter to her that she had the fastest time running. It was just something she wanted to finish.
That's the point, and that's it. It's that, that's the stuff that makes that, but, and that's the stuff that we remember. It's not the person who was born perfectly situated to be a marathon runner. It's not the person who had the right legs and arms and body, and they just got up there and effortlessly ran the marathon. It's what we remember, what we consider to be great, are those that overcame something to bring that out within them. That's the reason why we respect that, is because that's what we know to be true, and that's what we want for ourselves in our own lives. The parents that have the perfect children, they know deep down that that's not what it means to be great parents. It's the kids that are giving you the ride of your lifetime. Those are the kids that are going to make you the parents that you deep down can be. But it's hard. But that's really where your greatness lies.
Yeah.
Greatness is not comfortable. This is one of the greatest misconceptions also that we have in our society. We are living for comfort. People are building their lives to get more comfort. And that's the goal, more comfort. Work less, sleep later, sit in bigger chairs, nicer, bigger, more comfortable things. And it's nice to be comfortable. But greatness doesn't lie in comfort. It lies in discomfort. And that the choice of life to be comfortably mediocre or uncomfortably great is the choice that each of us make every single day. And the reason why many people don't choose to be uncomfortable is because they don't think they have the capacity. They don't think they have it. They think that somebody else is greater than them. And they don't realize that within them is all the same stuff as everybody else in the world if they make the right choices and make the right decisions and change their perspectives and take on bigger things and believe that.
Your third chapter is on how to make the ideal real. Let's talk a little bit about that, because I'm an idealist most of the time, and I'm also a very positive person. I always have been, long before I ever started doing these kinds of interviews. I've always just been that way. And some people say that, you know, the idealist in you, and that's not reality, you know. And I sometimes think about that in terms of you know, getting through from day to day perspectives. And I've even had employers. I've had bosses who are so pessimistic. I had one boss who lives, I don't know if he's still alive or not, but he lived by Murphy's Law, that was the way that things always were, that whatever can go wrong will go wrong. And it's like, how do you go from day to day without driving yourself crazy?
So the way you do it, and that's exactly right. First is understanding that whatever you're going to look for, you're going to find. And that person probably did live by Murphy's Law. For him, he always looked for what went wrong. So when he walked into a room, he immediately, subconsciously picked out all the things that went wrong to prove him right.
Mm-hmm.
So he literally put himself in a situation of having a life where everything went wrong because of his thoughts, not because of the world around him. But to do it day-to-day, you need a little bit of structure. And in the book, we have charts, and we have exactly how to get it done. It starts with visualization and seeing what you want to be and writing it down and using exercises to take you out of your life. We have an exercise called the eulogy, where you literally write the bullet points of your own eulogy to start to get your mind thinking about the values you want to be remembered for. And you have to start by doing the work. And the work is going through the process of figuring out what's inside, what you want, what you're looking for, what are the things you will hold most dear, and then creating the right rituals so that every day you're doing something very small to get you closer to your goal. And by doing rituals, you're conditioning your brain to get better at the things you should be doing, to get better at seeing the opportunities you should be seeing, and without creating a situation where you're going to give it up in a couple of days. So by working to understand what's inside and what you want to be, working to change the rituals, and then understanding how failure works and understanding how life works, you can literally take the ideal and slowly and systematically over the course of time make it real. Because that's just how we're built. We're built to do these things if you know how to do them.
Yeah. Yeah, bring a couple things to mind. One, back in 2000, I was working for a station. I had been hired on the 1st of September, and I think it was the 5th or 6th of November. They decided that they were going to sell the station, and so they started cutting staff. And I'm thinking, well, I'm going to be the first to go, because the old rule, first hired, last fired. Last hired, first fired. I made the cut. I was still employed at the end of the cutting frenzy. And then again in January, they did it again. But I didn't quite make the cut in March. Well, what was really strange was the year prior to that, I had been laid off four times from four different jobs.
Wow.
Now, the first two times, I went to the unemployment office and I filed. I filled out all the paperwork. And within 2 weeks, I didn't get a check because I had another job. So the third time I was let go, and each one, it was literally, I was let go, you know. I decided I wasn't going to go to the unemployment office. I figured, what was the point? If I got a job within the first 2 weeks, the first two times, I'm going to get a job within the first 2 weeks this time. I was laid off from that job. And then the fourth job I only had for a day because they decided they were going to reallocate the resources in a different direction. And again, I decided I wasn't going to go to the unemployment office. So I went ahead and I got this job that 1st of September. But it was really fascinating when you also talk about getting the things that you want. I've lived by this philosophy especially within my career, but I learned this from the school I went to, the broadcast school I went to back in Phoenix. You work with what you have until you get what you want. And when I was let go from that station, I didn't make the cut after, you know, them wanting to sell. I got a call 2 weeks later saying, would you come back under contract labor and run the radio station for us? And I'm thinking, well, sure. And I'm not kidding you. I literally ran that radio station by myself. I actually made one sale. But I was doing the production. I was doing the board work. I was doing the programming, the traffic. We did have a morning man who I had to produce his show from 6 to 10 a.m. every morning. I had to fire people and have security escort them out, which was very disconcerting because these were friends. So I got to actually run a radio station. I mean, you know, and that was an amazing thing for a kid of what was it? Was I 30? Yeah, I was in my early 30s. And so, you know, these kinds of things, they just happened. But I don't think they just happened, did they?
No, nothing just happens. When you're working for something in the right way, when you're doing the right thing, when you're pushing yourself beyond your perceived limitations, and then you're looking for these opportunities, when you come at the world with a positive perspective, you automatically create opportunities for yourself that wasn't otherwise there. You're building it. And your capacity to overcome challenge and then see the good in things puts that good into a greater perspective for you, which then gives you more hope and more resilience, more capacity, and then it continues to go. And people need to understand exactly that. Had you given up after your first time being laid off, you would have still been laid off.
Yeah.
But the idea that you were hopeful allowed not just, you know, the universe to, it's not just that. There is a sense of that, but it's not that. It's that it allowed you to be in a position to take advantage of opportunities.
You know, you used a phrase I've used for years, before my lens implant. I was legally blind. I was born legally blind and had a lens implant in 1996. I was within the blind and visually impaired community for most of my life. And I always used that phrase As far as myself, I couldn't speak for anybody else. I didn't think that was fair. I said, I deal with what I consider to be perceived limitations. And at the time, I said, I may never be able to fly a plane, okay? I don't think I'll ever, I probably won't ever be able to get a pilot's license because I don't have the vision for that. And that's okay because I've got friends who have planes and they'll take me up and take me flying. I didn't think I would ever drive a car either. And then I get the lens implant. And what am I doing? My wife and I are moving to Santa Barbara. And I'm looking out the window on May the 8th as we're driving from Phoenix. And this is like 8 or 9 o'clock at night going through Los Angeles and the freeways. And I'm looking out the window going, oh, my God, I'm driving through L.A. traffic. What's up with this picture here?
That's amazing.
And so, and I've always felt that I've always been in the right place at the right time. Have you felt that in your own life? Because it seems as though, you seem awfully young. I don't know how old you are, but you seem awfully young to have accomplished so much, that it seems like you must have been in the right place at the right time. I don't know if you were born with a silver spoon in your mouth or if you were born on the wrong side of the tracks. I'm curious as to, how all this wonderfulness, how this greatness came upon you. Did it happen at an early age?
That's sweet of you to say, and I appreciate the compliment. And the truth is, I don't think I had any silver spoons. My dad, a wonderful guy, is an immigrant. He came to this country, to this day owns a pizzeria. Spent a lot of my youth sticking my hands in hot pizza ovens and working really, really hard. Wasn't a great student. Spent, ended up being a lawyer because I think my options were either going to jail or representing the guys going to jail. I think those were the ones that my principal gave me. So I don't think that I grew up with the silver spoon. I had a lot of support, a lot of people saying you can do anything you want to do if you put your mind to it. And that my parents were, that was like number one in our home. But to me, I really believe that I believe that God runs the world, and I believe that He is in every one of our lives. And when I'm going through life, I try to remind myself that if I try to predict three steps out, I'm going to be less effective. That my job in life is to try to give value where I'm standing right now, try to learn as much as I can learn, try to do as much as I can do, try to help as much as I can help, and stop thinking about what's going to happen in 10 steps.
Mm-hmm.
And what ends up happening is even the stuff that you fail at, if you have a very short-term perspective, it may feel bad, but you never know as the lens lengthens if that failure actually setting you up for an eventual success.
Mm-hmm.
And I've learned that in my life, that whatever you're doing, if you put your whole heart into it and you stop worrying about when you're getting paid back and stop worrying about 10 steps from now if it's all going to work out, you sort of let go, let God. To me personally, just let it, just do the things that you can do and don't do what you can't do. You can't control everything. If you stay where you are, you'll make today great. Yesterday I was in Orlando for a conference, and we got on the plane. Tuesday was the conference. Wednesday I flew home. We had a 12 o'clock flight out to New York, and you get on the plane. We're about to taxi out. The captain gets on and says, there's some weather in New York, and we're all getting off the plane, and we're 2 hours delayed. Get back on the plane. 2 hours later, we're going to sit on the runway, another hour of delay. And I'm looking around the people around me, and there's two types of people. There are some people that are so frustrated, so upset, and they just can't, this is it. Their day is ruined. And there's some people saying, this is where I am. This is where I am. Let me just make today the best day it can be. So I'll read more. I'll work more. I'm sitting on an airplane. I'm not sitting in a trench. There's food. There's restrooms. I'll work. And that's how I see life. Things will happen to you. And you can't control that. And for those people that are trying to control the world, they spend an enormous amount of their energy invested on things they can't control.
Yeah.
And for those people that understand that energy is the most valuable thing they have, and they focus it in the most effective way possible, and that's not controlling the world, and that's also things. Like, you come home from a long day of work, you can put your energy into a TV series, or you can put your energy into a child. And it doesn't mean you can't watch TV, but you see people that'll just take that energy that has been given to them, whatever clicks of that day they have, whatever seconds that they've been given as a gift to live one day, and invest that time into gossip, into negativity, into toxicity, and some other people will take that same, in the same circumstances, and invest it into productivity, into optimism, and it's all the difference in the world.
Yeah, absolutely. I could not agree with you more. I am very grateful for the time that you have given us. I want to remind our listeners that the book is entitled Unlocking Greatness, the website unlockinggreatnessbook.com. Charlie Harari, I want to thank you so much for joining us here on the program. And as I do with all my guests, especially if it's on the phone or via Skype, should you ever find yourself out here on the West Coast in Central California, we would love to have you in studio to talk more about this. I would say it's extremely important. It's very valuable, and it literally can change one's life. I mean, even if you were just to take what you've shared with us, and someone's listening and gleans what you've shared already, just in this program, my God, they really could. But I encourage you to pick up a copy of the book as well. But should you do find yourself out here, please let us know. We'd love to talk to you more about this.
Thank you. Would love to be in studio with you. I think it would be an incredible opportunity for me. And thank you for the opportunity to speak with you and to your listeners. And I'm honored by it. And I look forward to more.
Before we let you go, three final questions. First question is, who is Charlie Harari?
A dad, a husband, and just a guy trying to live each day like it was his last.
What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you're doing now?
I want people to wake up in the morning and feel more empowered than they were the day before.
And finally, what is your life's purpose?
Good question. And I don't know, but I'm hoping one day to find out. And if I can just take every opportunity sent my way with the right perspective, I'm betting that when I'm at the end of my life, I'll look back and figure that all out.
Again, Charlie Harari, I thank you so much for joining us and sharing with us your insights from your book, Unlocking Greatness. Again, Unlocking Greatness book, the website is .com, so you're going to want to go there, unlockinggreatnessbook.com. Again, thank you. I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love to Lal.